This is Radio Free Cybertron, hosted by Brian Kilby, with J.D. Church, John DeLuna, XV, Amy Morgan, Peter Van, and Rob Clay. For the latest Transformers news, visit tformers.com.
So this is Radio Free Cybertron for January 9th, 2013. I'm your host, Brian Kilby, and with me this week I have Rob Clay and Chris Triplett from Fanboy Versus.
Hello.
So we are trying to do more cross-pollination between our shows. We want to have special surprise guests each week, each guest more surprising than the last. And this week it's Chris Triplett. So,
I was about to ask, who's the guest this week?
So you haven't been on in a while, Chris. How's it going?
That's good.
Get anything cool recently, toy-wise?
It's not new. I've had it for about a week, but Sound Blaster and Soundwave.
Which one do you like better? You still haven't opened Soundwave yet, have you?
Yeah, I opened Soundwave while I was talking to you. What I was doing, I was killing time. Ooh.
So, like with your camera, they look exactly the same.
They do! Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the sad thing about it, but when you look at them, Sound Blaster, I think, looks better. I really like his colors.
And Rob, you opted for Sound Blaster for a different reason. Is it because it's the one you found, or what was it?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. It was the one ToysRUs.com had available when it came up, so that's what I got. I'm pretty satisfied with it. I may go back and get Soundwave at some point, but you know, it's the same character. I'm not sure if I need two gigantic Soundwaves. So
yeah, there's like no reason to really have them both, but I saw them and I was like, I kind of want them both. So oh, I got them. Yeah.
So now, Blaster, I am definitely going to get.
Yeah.
So it's a different color and it's a new head. Is that basically it?
Blaster? New torso, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Torso and the front teeth are gone, too.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize that.
Okay.
I want them worse now.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I want it. I just can't find it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Blaster's not out yet, is he?
No, I can't find anything. No. I can't find it. I can't find Soundwave or Sound Blaster.
Well, I had to get mine off of BBTS. I was like, I ain't taking a chance. Our local stores suck. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm just going to order it. I wanted them both anyway, so I just got them both.
Yeah. Hey, so on the show this week, we have Transformers Rewind. This week, it's the Generation 1 episode, Roll for It. And we also have Rescue Center, and this week, it's the last episode of Rescue Center, at least for now, until more episodes of Rescue Bots come out. Amy and Nicole this week review the episode Little White Lies from Rescue Bots. And Rob, you and XV have a video review of a comic, what was it?
Basically all the comics that came out this week and last. Rage of the Dinobots 2, Regeneration 187, Spotlight Thundercracker, and Robots in Disguise 13.
And so you guys are doing the reviews now at tformers.com. So those tend to come out just about weekly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much as soon as the comics are available, we review them. So, yeah.
Pretty sweet. Pretty awesome. Hey, I wanted to mention this before we get to the news. We also have the news, like each week. If you haven't already, go to iTunes and leave us a review. That would be awesome. I know that it's been a while. We got a review a couple weeks ago. Thank you very much. We know we have hundreds of listeners for every review that we have, so it would be nice if we had a couple more. It would help us out. You know, we do this. We don't make any money off it. We do it because we love doing it. But we also like, you know, to know that people are out there and they like what, you know, what we do. And leaving an iTunes review is a really simple, easy way to help give back to RFC. It's how most listeners find podcasts. I would say 95% of our listeners come from iTunes. And it would go a long way to really, you know, just sort of help things out. So if you could, go to tfradio.net and click on the iTunes link on the show notes from this posting, or you can just go to iTunes and search for Radio Free Cybertron. That would help out a lot. So, let's jump to the news. So, you guys are going to have to help me out with this, because honest to God, I don't know who this is.
I have no idea who he is either. I saw the name, I saw the article saying, but I have no idea who this guy
is. Some guy is going to be in Transformers 4. Is that the guy from Walking Dead? I don't know. So Jack Rayner to play lead role with Mark Wahlberg, and it's not a reboot, it's a new trilogy. I have no idea who this guy is. I don't have care. But it's not Sam Witwicky, well, so that's all that matters.
We found out who he's playing. He's the race car driver character or something that we heard about, right? Is that right?
That's probably right.
Sure.
Sure, why not?
Let's see, Jack Rayner. Let's see if it says anything about him. No.
So, you know.
Well, all I can find is, like, he was cast. I think he's going to be Mark Wahlberg's son in it, because Mark Wahlberg's in it, and that's all I can find.
Do you think Mark Wahlberg will sing The Touch in this?
We can hope.
That would be awesome. But no full frontal nudity this time, Mark. That's okay.
It is a Michael Bay film, so he can probably make the movie any way he wants. So
yeah. Yeah.
If that's what he wants.
Yeah. No. So, next up in the news, at Shardicon, which I'm going to be there. Chris, you're going to be there.
I'm going to try to be there. I really want to be there.
XV's going to try to be there. John should be there. Rob Springer, not Rob Clay, will be there. Diecast in the chat said he'll be there. So lots of us are going to be there. And, you know, we'll do a get-together. You know, we're going to have a panel. We're going to do a lot. So I'm really, really, really stoked about Shardicon this year. It's awesome. There is going to be a custom class from Frenzy Rumble, and basically they are doing the Death Quintesson this year. It looks pretty cool. So this is, I guess, a render of what it's going to look like. That actually may be a shot. That looks really... I see texture and everything in there. I haven't signed up for the class. Honestly, I'm not good at things like this. But I would break it. But I, as we all know, but you know, I'm really excited to see this. Shardicon's really shaping up to be a really cool event, and
I hadn't heard of it before. I mean, how many years have they done it? Is this
Numero Uno? This is the first year.
First year, okay. Because that's cool. I mean, just like in our neighborhood, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Eric is the. Organizer, and he's a long time trans fan. You can actually, he has a Transformers blog, which we'll link to in the show notes. I was actually looking at his collection on a TF Source blog this past week, and it is drool inducing.
Was that link you sent us? The interview they did with him?
Yeah, and pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was. It's pretty awesome.
He's in Charlotte, dude. I mean, that's not far away. So it's pretty awesome. I'm always interested in like seeing personal collections like that from people that I know or sort of know. Like Rob Springer's collection, it's not as well organized as that, but it's pretty impressive. But it's just sort of neat, you know, knowing that there are other people out there, like real people, flesh and blood, that you could just meet on the street who have such impressive collections that sort of turn yours into, crap by contrast.
Well, you had an impressive collection at one point. You just sold them.
I sold it. I have no desire to have long-term attachment to any piece like that. There are a couple things I wish I hadn't sold. Like my Mitten Box Overlord. That I wish I had kept that.
Your Star Convoy you sold twice?
No, I only sold Star Convoy once. And then they did the reissue.
Still have the reissue.
They did a reissue right after I sold it, and I'm like, yes! Because I literally paid like $400 just for the Rodimus, the Hot Rodimus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am an idiot, so. But it's true. I am an idiot. It's long known. So, looking forward to Shardicon. Like, really, really looking forward to Shardicon. I need to see if we can get Eric on the show so we can talk more about that. I'll email him and see what he says. That would be cool. Also up in the news. Okay, I'm going to try to say this slowly, and I will try not to drool too much. But we got more shots of the Year of the Snake Omega Supreme. And holy freaking moly.
It's nice.
I could look at this thing all day, and to know that there's a 60% shot that I'll actually own this, it's pretty great.
But I liked the Energon toy all right, but yeah, that it's looking really nice.
I'm curious how they're going to do the head if it pops off. I'm certain it'll just about have to.
And then he was kind of like a headmaster, wasn't he? Like he was
he was definitely a headmaster. He was a minicon. But it's really nice. Go to tformers.com, and you can see shots of this thing. They've done a lot. It's not like this was a bad toy. Just like you said, it's a good toy.
But yeah, I thought it was fine.
But they have really outdone themselves. I never thought it would actually look this cool. And frankly, it looks a lot better than the original Omega Supreme.
Yeah.
The coloring is great. Heck, even the Year of the Snake Energon Optimus Prime doesn't look bad.
Yeah. I'm probably like in the minority, but I like that Optimus. I thought it was cool.
It's okay.
I mean, because like I liked it better than the Armada, and maybe about the same as the Galaxy 4 Cybertron. But I don't know. I thought it went bad. I mean, it's compared to like some of the stuff we get now. I thought it was a lot better.
Cybertron a little bit of an edge, but I do like the Energon Prime.
I absolutely love the deluxe Armada Prime.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a good toy.
That's like my favorite Optimus ever. That's up there. That's a great toy, and it's a shame that the Ultra or whatever scale the other one was, Leader Class, whatever, Supreme. What was it? Ultra?
It was a Leader.
Leader. It's a shame that it wasn't as nice, and it was like twice as big. We got more shots this week. It's a lot of news that it's just like more shots. But the thing is, back in the day, when no one had nice digital cameras, you know, you might get somebody might take something with a Polaroid or take it with a point and shoot, and then their crappy HP scanner might scan it to the internet. I was going through my computer, like all the Transformers photos I have in my collection, and most of them are like really crappy photos people took back in the day and scanned them. Now, you know, people take beautiful shots of toys that are coming out, and you just kind of have to look at them and just sort of reflect on how nice the thing looks. So we got shots of I want to say Frenzy, but it's Rumble. From the Masterpiece line coming up, and he's MP16, and he looks really nice. I'm gonna have to buy these. In addition,
how large are these, by the way?
I'm guessing they're probably gonna be scout sized, if I had to guess. You know,
what chances are that we'll get any of the cassettes for the U.S. release? Because we're getting Soundwave in the U.S.
Most
we
likely.
Have to be getting Soundwave.
Most likely. I'm kind of a Rumble is Red sort of dude, so I want to think of this as Frenzy. But, you know, it's... either way, it's nice. I want Rumble and Frenzy. I guess they are doing a Frenzy as well. They have to. It's Takara. But it looks really sweet. We also got, I think, pictures of Buzzsaw as well. But I don't see it listed here. It looks really sweet. So here he is with his Earthquake Rumble attachments. It looks really nice. That's like the Rumble that I always wanted, but never thought I would be lucky enough to have.
10-year-old Brian is very happy.
10-year-old Brian is having like a fit right now. So like, so the master, and I've said this before, the Masterpiece toys are the toys that most casual fans remember having as children.
Yeah.
So most people remember, oh yeah, I remember having the cassette, and he was awesome. He would transform, and he would do like the pile driver gimmick, and he was just, you know, had like 50 points of articulation. No, he didn't. But this is this is an adult collectible, and, you know, now that people are older and have a little more disposable income, we do get to be treated to things like this, and this is really nice. And I'm sort of, I'm just impressed by how nice this looks. Soundwave has the potential to be the best Masterpiece toy yet.
Yeah, I really like Grimlock, honestly, but yeah, it's been best.
Yeah, really nice looking. I really like Grimlock too, and I really like MP10 Optimus. I was thinking, yeah. I was thinking about this last week. We were saying, "What's next? What's next?" Well, they've already released a new Optimus. They'll eventually have to do a new Megatron.
Oh boy! If they do a tank Megatron, I'm in.
Oh, that would be awesome! But
Masterpiece G2 tank Megatron.
That would be pretty sweet. Now I figure they'll do another gun, and he'll be gun sized instead of like ginormous, you know.
Instead of like cartoon gun size.
Instead of like Incredible Hulk hand gun size. I mean the old one, of course. I know it has its fans, but I just think it's hideous. I couldn't buy it. I couldn't bring myself to buy it. I've held it and I've seen it. I just don't like it.
I just want to know when I'm getting my Masterpiece Galvatron.
I would say it's 2013 now, by 2016.
Okay. I can wait.
So here's something interesting. There's more at tformers.com. But at, let's see here, our friend David Schultz, blog, he actually was able to connect with Jason Jansen, who was Tommy Kennedy.
Ooh.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. Apparently, David had posted something to his blog about Tommy Kennedy, and much like myself, Jason here does ego searches on Google all the time, and he found the blog post and he reached out to David, who did a nice little Q&A with him. It's kind of neat. I like how HooperX sort of described it. It's like he read the blog, and he's like, spoiler, Tommy Kennedy is some dude. Which is basically what it is. He's just a guy who happened to hang out with Optimus Prime. He was a ginormous puppet.
You know, I never saw any of those episodes when they were originally on TV. I never saw them until you got, like, I don't know, like a tape of them or something?
I got a couple tapes from Rockman 666, yeah.
That was the first time I'd ever seen them. I was, like, shocked. I was like, good God, how did I miss this?
It was on, like, at 6:30 in the morning on Channel 18, that Fox affiliate. The one out of Charlotte. It was, like, at 6:30 in the morning on Saturdays. You were probably asleep.
Possibly.
I was up, of course, waiting for Muppet Babies to come out at 7 o'clock.
Why wouldn't you be?
Exactly. But that's pretty cool. So you should go and read that article there. Let's see here. I do want to mention this real quick. We have first looks at the Transformers Prime Beast Hunters Ripclaw. Am I the only one who actually thinks this looks really cool?
No, I think it looks cool. Good. Yeah.
And go ahead.
You know, I don't think it's outstanding, but I think it looks pretty good, and it there's just this confluence of, you know, things about it that are going to make it fairly desirable to be a Transformer. It's female. It's a new character. You know, it's going to be, I think, tough to find.
Yeah, so, I think
pre-order
so.
Pre-order that one is what I need to do. Okay, understood.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that I like about it is that it reminds me of, that Fantastic Four villain?
Annihilus?
Annihilus, yeah.
Oh, yeah!
that's what I like about it. Oh. I say it, and I'm like, you killed Johnny Storm!
He needs, like, a torn Fantastic Four shirt to hold up to Reed Richards.
Yeah. But, need a little Ultimate Nullifier there.
Yeah.
To threaten it with. But I think it looks really cool, though. I definitely want this. I mean, I don't know how good a toy it'll be, but it looks awesome. It'll look great on my shelf.
Yeah. I haven't seen any Beast Hunter stuff. Have you guys seen any of it?
On the shelves now.
Yeah, on the shelves. Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
On the on our Facebook page yesterday, someone had posted some photos of some of the toys in package. I like the packaging for Beast Hunters.
It's a Predaking on the side, right?
Yeah, well, just the way the package looks. I forgot who it was, Tony or somebody, had mentioned that he doesn't like the look as much as he did like the Prime packaging. But I never cared for the Transformers Prime first couple waves, the packaging. It's just like really, 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 really white and generic. Mm-hmm. Never did a thing for me.
Yeah. It's so generic, I can't even remember what it looked like, honestly.
Yeah,
it's not standing out to me.
You know, I sort of miss the days when, like, you could just sort of look at the packaging and remark at how nice it was. Like, I love the Armada packaging.
Yeah, I love the Armada. Like, when I found Armada Megatron, I was like, holy crap.
I love that packaging.
It just popped out at me for some reason.
Yeah, I like that. And G2 packaging, you know, sort of, that, of course, has its bands. Some of the G1 packaging is nice. I don't think G1 is aged. I think G1's kind of timeless, the packaging, but I don't think...
I kind of like the Fall of Cybertron packaging. Here's the box for Soundwave. It's kind of cool looking.
It's not bad. It's definitely
it's
not bad.
It's shaped looking. Like, it's got this chunk cut off at the side.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad. But I'm really looking forward to... the toy. I think it looks great. And one more thing in the news, it's only barely made the cut, but I wanted to mention it. We got shot of in package of the Transformers Encore 20A Devastator, which is the anime version. And I like it. The coloring is more in line with the anime. I mean, it's like a greener green and a purpler purple. And I think it's got a new head.
Mm-hmm.
So...
it would have to for me to be interested in it, and I'm still not.
Yeah, the problem, and I think Paladin in the chat had mentioned it before, is that the Devastator mold is not worth the going price for an Encore toy.
No, I'll be looking forward to seeing if this head shows up in the Big Lots Devastator in a couple of years. At that point, I'd love to have it, but...
And the thing is, the Big Lots Devastator is not bad.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's almost the same quality as the original G1 or the Encore toy.
Is the Big Lots Devastator still available? Because I haven't even seen it before.
I got one a year and a half ago. It was the G2 colors.
God, I kind of like that, actually.
I found some of the place where I got that knockoff toy that I was telling you about. They had all of the different colors, including the pre-Transformers version. And they had the version that some people had called Generation 3. They had that one as well. It looks really nice. But of course, still it was like $70 or $75.
Is that like the orange and something or?
They have the yellow. They have the orange. They have the black.
I've got the yellow. I've actually got a yellow G2 Devastator. It's the only Devastator I've got. But yeah, like an orange or something else, that'd be kind of awesome.
Is it original?
Yeah, I got the original. I think you were with me when I bought it. I've had it for years.
A comic shop?
It was a comic convention in Hickory Mall, I think.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
God, this has been like forever ago.
I've had two or three original G1 Devastator sets, and I think I sold them all for more than I paid for them. So I'm very happy with my $5 set from Big Lots. I mean, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And if it breaks, I don't care. It's not one of my favorite molds, but
no.
But if I had it, I would prefer to have it in anime colors. So, okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We will be back right after this. We are going to the review, sets of reviews from Robin XV. Then we'll have Rescue Center, and we'll follow that up with Transformers Rewind, its role for it. We'll be back right after this.
Warning: the following segment may contain spoilers for the most recent Transformers comic books. Okay, so we missed last week's segment, but the books had been mostly delayed then anyway, so I don't think it really matters that much. So what do we have this time now? Spotlight Thundercracker, Regeneration 187, Robots in Disguise, what is that, 13 now?
Mm-hmm.
And Rage of the Dinobots 2?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we start with Rage of the Dinobots, since that was the issue that actually did come out properly last week. Of course, okay. Thundercracker and Regeneration leaked for a few hours on Comixology. Oops! Rage of the Dinobots, nothing really happened.
Yeah.
Do you remember one time before we talked about how the strength of More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise was that the storytelling is not decompressed to fill a story to a predefined arc length?
Yeah. And
that is not true for Rage of the Dinobots.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other things I really, you know, like I said in my review, the other things I noticed is that there's not a lot of, like, characters here. The only people who display any kind of character are people who we know from 30 years back what they're going to be like. And Sir Kit, Ripclaw, who is, you know, loyal toady. That's it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's just nothing. There's no substance.
Mm-hmm. From the writers of Transformers Prime.
Is it a bad sign when I wish the people who wrote the video game would be writing this comic book?
That would be great, actually. I'd like to see them do that.
I don't know if it would be great, but it's not like it would be any worse, anyway.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's tie-in material, so of course they're going to probably have it more planned out from start to end what's going to happen. But even so, it just... You know, the fact that they do that and then decide how many issues it should take to get there, you really just get a lot of slow, boring stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's... Yeah, they probably ought to just write the stories first and then see how much time they have, but...
And am I imagining it, or did the art style change kind of significantly between issue 1 and 2?
Little bit. It got, I think, a little bit clunkier. I have a feeling our artist here might be having a little bit of trouble hitting his deadlines. Am I the only one who is getting a kind of Manny Gallen from G2 vibe from this? It's just how all, you know, with all the neck cables and how all the straight lines aren't quite straight. That kind of thing.
I suppose.
Gallen was a little bit softer and rounder on details, but there are just certain there's one close up of Grimlock I'm thinking of here that just the lines, the perspective, the everything just is all wrong.
Are you sure it's Manny Gallen and not Pat Lee you're thinking of?
No, because I mean Pat Lee could at least draw straight lines that looked like they belonged together in the same perspective for all his failings.
Are we talking about the same Pat Lee?
Mostly.
I'm thinking Pat Lee who draws things like that spatial paradox thing from the episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Most of the Pat Lee stuff I ever saw that the square things actually looked square. Manny Gallen couldn't do that.
See, all the Pat Lee things I remember is the square things look like marshmallows.
Yes, but they were marshmallows drawn in perspective.
Okay, so Regeneration 1 is kind of having the same problem that Rage of the Dinobots is having. Because, okay, first, Furman went into this knowing, okay, it's going to run 20 issues. And then, besides that, he seems to have made the decision himself, okay, let's do 4 story arcs within that 20-issue space to each do their own thing. So he's, like, under 2 sets of predeterminations of the overall length, one being established by IDW and the other one, I guess, being self-imposed.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of working it twice as bad, and that's really showing in how these issues are pacing out.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think if anything, he'd be rushing to make sure he'd get everything he'd want in there, but that is definitely not the case. I kind of wonder if this didn't start out being a year's worth of material at one point that just, and these five-issue story arcs used to be three-issue story arcs, but...
They seem like they'd fit that space better.
They do.
But as far as issue 87 goes, the pacing is like the least of the problems, I think.
Yeah, there's still the whole evil switch thing, which is, you know.
Yeah. The allegiance being genetically coded in is not something new for Furman. He did this in Generation 2 as well, although even back then it still left as bad a taste.
Yeah, I think the only reason that I didn't notice it then is because I was, what, 14?
Well, so, let's see. In 1992, 13, I was 8 years old. Or was it 90? It was 93, wasn't it?
Yeah, so.
In 1993, I was 9 years old and was not actually aware there was a Transformers comic at the time.
Well, there you go. I got it mostly as it was coming out. Had to go find back issues. One of the things I hate with periodical comics. I never did get a complete run of G2 until the Titan paperbacks. But
you're so old, Rob.
But yeah, it just, you know, the when you're 14, I think you look at the idea that some people or things are just born evil a little bit less critically. But you know, it doesn't work too well at this point. I know it's one of his things, but it could have been left behind very easily, especially since, you know, in the same panel in which he brings that up, we start talking, Scorponok starts talking about how, you know, allegiances are rarely so cut and dried and black and white and all that, and then the, you know, former headmasters come out and go, oh, an Autobot, kill!
Yeah.
It you know, contradicting himself within the space of a page.
Okay, the way it's led into with Scorponok's dialogue, it could be interpreted as being, okay, this isn't really so much as a faction switch as it is basically turning off their morality.
Yeah.
But as you point out, that's kind of a shot in the foot when they specifically call out Grimlock as an Autobot sympathizer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's kind of like Furman doesn't even know what he's doing from one point to the next in this process.
Yeah, and...
Although, looking over that issue again today, it occurred to me something else Scorponok said over the panel where the process is being done the first time. It may not just be that his machine is rewriting that part of the genetics. It may also be reprogramming Decepticon predilections into the subjects.
I think there must be a certain amount of reprogramming here, because by the end of the issue, he is Lord Scorponok to them, and I can't quite see why just suddenly removing someone's conscience would make them loyal to this jerk over here.
Right. Because, I mean, some of them weren't even around for when he was cool at the end of G1.
Mm-hmm.
Before his face melted.
Yes.
But, you know, Unicron will do that to you.
Yeah. And, of course, that was the other Scorponok, so...
Right, but, you know, I mean, to them, it should be all the same thing, pretty much.
Yeah.
Although, like you pointed out in your review on T-Formers, there was the one pretty good morbid joke Furman threw in there.
Yeah, the couple of flashes of, basically, UK Transformers writing.
Yeah.
I've been looking at some other 80s UK comics, and they are also morbid and weird.
It's that British wit.
Yes, definitely.
They're a little morbid and weird.
Pretty much.
All right, so RID 13, which is basically, well, like you pointed out in your review, the middle of a story arc.
Yeah. Definitely, there's still a lot more happening in the middle of this story arc than there is in either of the other two story arcs we were looking at this week.
Because this is not written to be decompressed.
Yeah, this is written to tell a damn story and get it over with. So
yeah.
And again, love that. So
remember I said that issue 12 of More Than Meets the Eye was like the season finale to a TV show?
Mm-hmm.
The analogy kind of applies here, too, where the issues of both ongoing comics are written like TV show episodes.
Yeah.
One example in specific I've used before is with Babylon 5, which if you've watched that, you know every episode is its own specific story, but it usually all ties into the season-long plot arc. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Straczynski was really good at doing that independently of each other when necessary, but mm-hmm. a lot of TV shows, you'll see that done well anyway, and I think that's one of the things that's setting these ongoing series apart from other Transformers comics.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how I remember the first time reading through the Marvel G1 issues, where, yeah, you'd have your story arcs that come up every now and then, but there was also a lot of, you know, issue-to-issue stuff, and it's a lot more pleasant to read casually at that rate. You're not always in the middle of some major thing going on.
Yeah. Within the last year or so, I've been reading the blog of Jim Shooter, who was editor-in-chief of Marvel when Transformers mm-hmm. started, and one of his biggest criticisms of current comics is that every issue should be a good jumping-on point.
Yes, thank you.
Now, I'm not entirely sure that's the case here with Robots in Disguise. I mean, we're kind of in the middle of things. We are, you know, we're getting recaps in the good old sense as we go. You know, this particular story arc, each issue has taken place in the perspective of a different character. Mm-hmm. Wheeljack last issue, Starscream this issue. So, you know, we're getting the recaps in their, you know, voice and in their thoughts, so it's also not a waste of space.
Right.
And that is good.
It is. It is. It really is. You know, we've gone over the unlikelihood of enjoying a political thriller set to Transformers before,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, we don't need to retread on that here, but one thing, like, between Transformers Prime and Robots in Disguise, one thing that's really happening is I'm enjoying Starscreams as characters.
Mm-hmm.
Not just as the comedic foil to Megatron, who, you know, proclaims leadership every time Megatron trips over a rock.
Yeah, Starscream definitely has, you know, his own motivations here. Very clear ones for, and not just, you know, the usual, like you said, hand-wringing melodrama kind of thing. And I really love that little speech to Megatron at the beginning of the issue where he's saying, you know, I could, you know, your way is messy. We are looking at another 4 million years of war with whatever it is you think you're doing, and I can unite the entire planet under the Decepticon flag if you just don't ruin it.
Right. And then he Megatron smiles.
Yes, and then he smiles and proceeds to ruin it.
Of course, Starscream has his little freak-out moment in there, too, which is entirely appropriate, but it's just so hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I love this book more than I think I ever should, you know, for the subject material it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what other specific thoughts did you have on this issue?
Mainly, I'm just wondering, I'm kind of hoping that the next issue will be taken from Prowl's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't particularly see where he is at the end of this issue as being his end game, his final plan for fixing Cybertron. But at the same time, I have no idea what he's really doing.
Well, I mean, you have to remember what Prowl's character type is. You know, first and foremost, he's a tactician, a strategist, and a logician.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put all those three things together, morality kind of falls by the wayside. He's going to go with what will achieve his end the most effective way.
Yeah.
Which, from the end of this issue, looks like it might be an alliance with the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm. And, in all honesty, if Megatron has learned anything from dealing with Starscream, he will shoot Prowl in the face immediately.
You would think, yeah.
But he never figured that out with Starscream, so I'm not counting on it.
Well, yeah. no, I mean, I would think that Megatron would be utilizing Prowl while it suits him, but then as soon as his position's solidified, that's not really going to be necessary anymore.
Yeah. The one thing I'm kind of curious to see how it plays out is that the thing with Metal Hawk, we mentioned that at this point the Nails are still thought to outnumber both Autobots and Decepticons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to speculate for a minute, I almost expect this arc to end with basically the Nails kicking both factions off the planet for good.
Well, if not kicking them off the planet, at least asserting authority over them, since there are so many more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not hard to see. Bumblebee's pretty much given up at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's hit him that he's completely unequipped to handle what's going on right now. Although his decision to open up elections the next morning is probably too little too late when you don't know if there's going to be a next morning.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it looks like it's setting up for Metal Hawk and the unaffiliated Cybertronians to take over.
Yeah.
As for what that's going to turn into over the longer term in the book, I mean, who knows at this point?
Yeah.
One thing you can really hand to these titles is the story developments are not that predictable.
Yeah, I already, I think, have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen through Regen 1 for the next couple of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the whole thing about balance that Furman keeps going back to, another one of his old saws, you know, the fact that Galvatron's basically showed right up the second Megatron was dead. You know, we're mm-hmm. basically going to go through a Decepticon leader greatest hits here until the end of the book, I think.
But they destroyed Thunderwing.
He'll be back.
Aww. One last wild card for Robots in Disguise, though. If you remember, partway through More Than Meets the Eye, it took a couple issues on the side to visit a group of Decepticon scavengers who ended up digging up Grimlock.
And then
they decided to head off for Cybertron with him to use him as a bargaining chip.
Hmm.
So that's probably still something that's in the works for the future of these books.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if next issue we see Grimlock land with a ship full of extremely deceased scavengers.
I kind of think it might be issue before issue after next at the earliest before okay. that happens, just because it's going to have to look like if they're going for Megatron solidifying a temporary leadership position, they're going to want to have that be the status quo for at least one issue before something comes in to mess that up, I think.
I'm not sure about it, because I kind of wonder how long Megatron's leadership is going to last. Just the thing Prowl said about only one faction is going to survive tonight, I kind of expected this whole thing to be happening basically all within the space of this one night, and however it is resolved, it'll be resolved by the end of that, but I could be wrong.
We'll just have to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
So finally, for this large batch of issues, we have Spotlight Thundercracker, which I kind of feel like is the least consequential of all the books that came out.
It is. I mean, we're on and off, we're getting things about Metroplex throughout all the books, and this kind of ties into that. But, you know, the real point, I think, to this was just to show that Thundercracker was a Transformer who basically liked Megatron's stated ideals and then saw the bunch of bastards he wound up working with.
Right. I mean, that's something that's come up before, too, where Megatron had pretty admirable concepts at the beginning versus the really corrupt Autobot government, but the people he had to engage to actually put any of that forward were the lowest dregs of society.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who stayed around for the next several million years.
Yes.
But no, I mean, basically nothing actually happens in this issue. It's just kind of a character study of Thundercracker. Mm-hmm. After the end of All Hail Megatron, when you know basically the whole structure of the Transformers fell apart, Thundercracker abandoned the Decepticons and was hanging out on Earth studying humans, and I think a lot of people had hoped that Spotlight Thundercracker would be looking at what he was up to at the same time the new ongoing titles were going on, because he hasn't shown up again. But instead, we get this one set millions of years ago, which basically could just be thrown out, because, again, nothing happens in this that has any ramifications for any other books.
Yeah, I mean, we already know Metroplex is wandering around at random, and that's about the only thing of that ties into much of anything else that happens. I mean, it has a brief reference to Spotlight Orion Pax, and I kind of think that eventually all the stories set in the past are going to kind of build up to something else, but I'm not sure what that is yet. And again,
I know we have upcoming still spotlights for Bumblebee and Megatron. Hmm. So, I mean, maybe by the end of that, it will be obvious how all of these fit together into whatever's going to happen in the main titles. But at the moment, it's just kind of like, well, here's some side stories. Read them or not. Mm-hmm. but yeah, and the thing, too, is, well, okay, a lot of people are kind of this way and that way about the Waspinator cameo, especially since there is basically no redesign for him to fit in with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And he kind of seemed to just show up to be Waspinator and die.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a thing. But another thing is, I felt like Bumblebee's characterization was out of place.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of playing the part of the leader, which struck me as something that he has only really come into in the comics recently,
and right.
Not entirely, you know, effectively, of course, either, but that's, you know, more the robots in disguise discussion than this, but.
Right, but that's the point, though. Bumblebee's characterization felt out of context for the setting of this issue.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, it's easy to appear as an effective leader when everything's kind of under control for you, but It still didn't seem like how Bumblebee should have been written at that point in the timeline.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a goof up.
Pretty much.
But otherwise, I really don't have any relevant points for Spotlight Thundercracker.
That's okay, neither did Spotlight Thundercracker.
Coming from the farthest reaches of the universe to challenge the worst villains on Earth are the most powerful heroes ever in the Battle of the Superpowers Collection. Hark! Batman being called to stop a dastardly deed? New from Kenner's Superpowers Collection, the Batmobile. Figures with power action sold separately.
Got you, Joker. Don't laugh yet.
Release the war.
It's a trap. Activate Batarang. Trouble, Batman? Not my Batmobile. Unleash phase two.
Is this the end of our heroes in the Batmobile? You decide.
Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers internet radio show since 1999. 100% girlfriend free since 1999.
It's time for another Radio Free Cybertron Retro Rescue Bots review. I am Amy.
I am Nick. Hello.
And we are reviewing our last Rescue Bots Season 1 episode today called Little White Lies.
We actually made it through the whole season.
I know. It's great. Awesome. It was broadcasted August 4th of 2012, and it was written by Brian Holfield. Holfield. There we go. Holfield. Our Rescue Bots episode has a very stormy theme as we open our adventure, but the Burns brothers almost get in an accident in the first 2 minutes of the show, and that puts Chief in a very grumpy mood. But it's more than that. Dad is sort of under the impression that no one has remembered it's his birthday today.
Aww, can't forget your daddy's birthday.
No, you can't do that. Yep. But the kids are actually sort of playing dumb because they have a surprise waiting for Dad after all. Which brings up a great conversation from the bots about holidays and birthdays and all these dates that humans celebrate, like, you know, setting the dessert on fire and lighting the tree on Arbor Day.
I like that. This is where you set the dessert on fire. Oh, yeah, girl.
That was so great.
Again, yeah. Classic Blades.
Exactly. But then we actually get into the real theme of our show, which is telling little white lies as Chase's experience becomes a tale of how even the little ones don't end very well.
But then you get to learn sometimes it's needed, yeah, as he explains to Chase later on in the episode. So.
Yeah. But also, I wanted to point out real quick that Chase's understanding of the concept of a little white lie is kind of more black and white. It's like either it's okay to lie or it's not. Mm-hmm. I thought.
What did he say? He's like, it doesn't matter what color it is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what color it is.
Yeah. It's a lie, still a lie. Yeah. Like that's a good way to point it out, though.
Yeah, it's good. This show, as we go on, we find out more information about this, and yeah, anyhow. Okay, so how it all goes wrong. Chief tells his kids that he and Chase are going to the docks, but in reality, he goes to the bakery to pick up a cake because he thinks everyone forgot about his birthday, and he's going to bring home a cake tonight when they can relax together and eat it in a nice, modest celebration. So, but on the way home, they check out this loud noise. I don't know how they could hear, but they are able to hear this loud noise coming out of the mine, but it turns out to be nothing. But that puts them in a situation where they fall through the floor and aren't able to get back out.
Yeah, because mines aren't safe, kids.
Yeah.
That's one thing you should take away from this. Don't go playing around in mines.
Yeah, don't go playing around in mines. meanwhile, the kids can't get a hold of Dad, and once it gets a little too late, they go out looking for him, and they find that they didn't go to the docks after all, so they end up looking for Chase and Chief through the night, all over the island they're searching, and it's not until the morning when they get a call from the bakery after they get home because they're all tired and they want to have something to eat and rest up a little bit before they go back out. They get a call from the bakery because Chief left his wallet there, and that's when they figure out, that's where he was after all. And so they investigate and they find out, there's this mine next door there. Oh, it must be there. So they end up going and they investigate the mine, and they investigate his mind.
It goes along because, you know, Chase is learning how the mind works with these colorful lies.
While they're there, they find footprints, and it turns into a rescue mission. In the end, I think all of them learn that it just works out better if you tell the truth from the beginning. Even if you want to throw a surprise party, yeah. Even the little white lies can have their consequences. So, I really liked this the conversations they had on white lies. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that humans do, and to see these questions that the bots ask, it was kind of cool because it's not like they're little kids, but yet in a sense, because they know nothing about, you know, the way humans work and stuff like that, the little social intricacies and all of that. It's interesting to see from their point of view what a little white lie, you know, that type of thing. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, the part that I liked was how he was explaining that to Chase. Sometimes you have to have the white lies because in their defense, they're having a little white lie to the rest of the community about the bots. I'm like, yeah. And so Chase understood that he has to lie about who he really is to protect the many. I thought that was interesting how made that concept.
Of course, he was saying, "Oh, it's not the same thing." Yeah, well, kind of is. Kind of. Sorry, Chase. It kind of is for Mr. Black and White. You are.
Yeah. So, what a better person to try to, because it was mostly focused on Chase, and he's the one that this was a perfect episode for.
Yeah.
Because again, black and white, like you said, for him to try to stretch it into a little gray area.
That's a big challenge for him, because he's he's more of that, you know, literal person. He's a almost everything he he takes a lot of things literally rather than figuratively. So two other things I wanted to point out. The baker mentions the lady of the house. Now this kind of struck me a little bit odd, because if Griffin Rock is a small town, you would think that he would already know. I mean, we haven't seen a mom, so I'm guessing that she's not in the picture. So, or you know, I don't know. Maybe they've been divorced. I don't know. I have no idea. It just raised a few questions. I went, okay, maybe we'll get more on that later.
Maybe she's locked up in the attic. maybe there's a big black line that Chief is not telling us.
Or there's a darker theme that we haven't seen here yet. Yeah. My goodness. Also, Chief gets hurt while he's in the mine. So I thought that was kind of intense for my young viewers, but it was
I was getting kind of scary there. You know, it's like, oh no, his arm's hurt. He got knocked out. You know, he took a beating.
A minute there, I thought he was going to drown because of how the water was in there. Oh yeah. I was like, you don't know how long it's going to take for all that water to drain out. He could have drowned in that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's an intense episode at the end. You're like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I still really love the episode.
You think, well, nothing's going to happen. But then deep down, you're like, maybe.
In reality, because this is something that happened when I was a kid. I lived in an area where there was an irrigation ditch. And you don't want to be where there's like a little opening and water's seeping through or whatever, because you're going to get stuck there. So if you get sucked down to that, you have to stay until all the water comes out and the sucking is gone. Or, you know, in this instance, in an irrigation ditch, you get sucked underneath, you're going to drown because you can't get off. You can't get off the part that's holding you there. And so it was just, they told the kids about, you know, that, and say you don't want to get in the water at all, because if you get sucked too close to that, we're not gonna be able to get you out. You know, there's no standing by dive team waiting to jump in there if you go into that. So it was one of those things that, you know, you just were told never to go in it, and this is the reason why. So I was like, I just kept going, don't die. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, this is an intense episode, I gotta admit. Yeah. And there's a lot of good lessons that came from it, too.
Yes, it was very good for the young'uns, for the recklets.
Yeah.
The kidlets, the recklets.
Where's
that?
Where have I heard that before?
So we have not yet reached this episode on our full reviews on the Rescue Center over on theunderbase.libsyn.com, but we should be getting around to this episode pretty soon. So, and as far as I have heard, no broadcast date has been announced yet for the Rescue Bots season 2. It will be broadcasted. It will. I'm pretty sure it will. It will be broadcasted sometime during 2013. So stay tuned to RFC or tformers.com for more information about that. So, and we'll see you in the near future for our continued reviews.
Aloha.
Bye.
Radio Free Cybertron will return after these messages.
The Autobots have a new leader, troop carrier, and born fighter. The magnificent Ultra Magnus! And Galvatron is the new leader of the Decepticons, laser cannon and fearsome warrior. Galvatron and Ultra Magnus, the new leaders! Robots in disguise from Hasbro.
The courageous Ultra Magnus is a born leader. We meet at last, Galvatron. And it will be the last time we meet.
And Galvatron is Ultra Magnus, the sworn enemy.
The Transformers!
Galvatron transforms from laser cannon to fighting robot.
And Ultra Magnus from huge car carrier to Autobot commander.
And now it's here in theaters everywhere. Transformers the movie.
It's overdrive.
Does Prime die? Transformers the movie, rated PG, now playing everywhere. Don't miss it.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We now return to Radio Free Cybertron. Radio Free Cybertron.
Transformers.
Rewind.
This week on Transformers Rewind, it's Roll For It. Starscream, still in command of the Decepticons after Megatron's disappearance, leads Thundercracker and Soundwave in attacking a hydroelectric power generator.
What was that?
The Autobots respond quickly.
Just your friendly neighborhood Decepticon records.
Can the chat and start kicking pig iron?
Battle is short. With little to show for their efforts, the Decepticons retreat. Optimus Prime sends Prowl and Blue Streak to follow.
Starscream, Thundercracker, you two look like Optimus Prime.
Meanwhile, on Cybertron, Megatron resumes contact with Earth. Despite his absence, Megatron commands that their scheduled attack on an antimatter laboratory continue as planned. The battle-damaged Decepticons set out to find repair parts in the interim. Inside the antimatter lab, Chip Chase and Spike are greeted by Dr. Alcazar.
It would be a mystery to us as well.
I thought you were just another pretty face.
Chip, I asked you to come by for this. This diskette will let your home computer talk with old Betsy Brainiac here anytime, day or night.
Can't wait to test it out.
Let's cook a few crankcases.
You don't have Prime and Brawn to bail you out this time.
The Decepticons are coming to steal the antimatter formula?
The antimatter formula, flesh creature! I want it!
Your tool hate! I erased it!
He lies! He uploaded the formula to someone. I don't know who, but I soon will. Let this human go. We seek another.
Oh, wow! Dr. Alcazar sent me the antimatter formula!
In the aircraft factory, Prowl is injured by Soundwave's blast, and his battle computer goes offline. Desperate, Prowl scans for another online computer to interface with. The signals find Chip Chase.
Online computer! Prowl, this is Chip Chase. Don't worry. I'm assuming control now.
Well, you sure had me execute a fantastic move, Chip.
No, Decepticons.
Chip memorizes the antimatter formula and destroys all evidence.
There's no way the Decepticons can learn to make the antimatter.
Inside, Soundwave uses his scanning abilities to extract the formula from Chip's brain. Megatron orders Chip disposed of and begins creating antimatter with the equipment in the lab. Just as Thundercracker moves in to terminate Chip, a group of Autobots attack. Optimus Prime drives through the lab walls and unleashes his Autobot warriors. But too late. The injured Autobots limp back to their headquarters, where Ratchet and Sparkplug immediately go to work. Chip laments his inability to keep the antimatter formula from falling into Megatron's hands, but Wheeljack tries to console him. He's got a plan for the formula and could use Chip and Spike's help.
Into atomic particles. Prime!
Okay, Prime, let's hit it!
Skywarp, help! Get the antimatter gun!
For that but I'll blast you first.
Not if Wheeljack's invention works, you won't.
What's going on?
Megatron orders a retreat, and in the exit, cites Chip as the reason for the Decepticon defeat.
I am? I did? Really?
You sure did.
You may not be an Autobot, but when you rolled for broke back there, you sure could have fooled me.
Roll for It is an episode that I've seen dozens of times. I can't... It's when I think of Generation 1, specifically Season 1 and Season 2, Roll for It is always the episode I go to. It, you know, watching it, it's been a while since I've actually sat down and watched it, though. And it's, you know, it's way more inventive and creative than a lot of later episodes. It's, they like to do lots of different things. It's really well plotted in my mind and paced. Except for the whole, you know, genius kid trope, which we see later on throughout Transformers. But
why is it that he gets no introduction?
I know.
It's like, this is
weird.
He spikes it's Buddy. Like,
presumably, it's called Roll for It because Chip is in a wheelchair.
No.
Okay? Because, like, the final line of the thing is, Mumbles is, oh, you rolled like an Autobot. I'm like, okay, you know, that's fine. I get that. But I think it's actually to the episode's credit that, although this is, I mean, the whole episode is essentially written around Chip. It is, yes, Chip's introduction episode, but they never at any point go, this is my friend Chip Optimus. He's here to do science. They never actually bring him in like that. But it's to the episode's credit that he just happens to be in a wheelchair.
Yes.
It's not like, here is the science boy, and the Autobots go, oh, what is wrong? Are your lower mechanical digits immobilized? Or, you know, something like that. And then they have to go, oh, and Ratchet will offer to fix him or some crazy dumb shit like that. but they don't. They just go, really genius kid who saves the day. Not even despite the fact that he's in a wheelchair. Is in wheelchair and saves day. Wheelchair irrelevant.
Yeah.
Which is really good. In the very next episode, no one's ever disabled as long as he has courage. And I'm like, oh, way to completely pip it to the post. No, you further.
I can't watch this episode now without thinking back to that Dr. Smooth video.
Yeah.
That Dr. Smooth video has completely ruined early G1 for me.
What happened in the video? I didn't see that one.
I don't feel like it's a good idea for me to go into details explaining this.
Okay, good. But this episode...
If you just check YouTube, you can find it.
But this episode, like, you know, it introduced Chip Chase, and he plays a central role. He helped this professor or scientist build... create an antimatter device. But they do, like I said...
Like you do.
Yeah.
I know several high school kids who, you know, have the time to help out major laboratories and people with, like, doctorate degrees in particle physics, you know, to sort of help them figure out them antimatter particles.
Through Chip, they do one of the neater things I thought that actually ever happened in the first couple seasons of Transformers. It makes no sense, but when Prowl and Blue Streak are fighting the Decepticons in the hangar, Prowl is injured. His battle computer is damaged.
Nonsense.
I know. I love it, though.
I'm in it here, all right? Because this is a point I wanted to bring up. How stupid is that? My battle computer is broken. I am going to lend access to my body and weaponry to a random person that might happen to be using the internet right now.
I love that.
What?
I love
the
that,
internet
though.
In 1984. Anybody who might happen to have a dial-up connection, I'm going to say, please will you help me fight these things, and hope that they don't do something stupid like run off and attack a city. Yes.
But, you know,
he connected to the only person that had something more than a 3-kilobyte modem, which was Chip Chase, because Chip Chase really loved his porn. Because he had that on a... He had two choices. He was either going to connect him or Megatron.
Actually, I'm betting in 1984, a 3-kilobit connection would have been like a college level or a university level connection.
Because, yeah, I mean, he had it.
Because that would have been. Yeah.
You know.
I mean, doesn't Machine Wars Prowl's bio say something about how he's able to process terabytes of information?
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not that unlikely, is it? And then he can run off of 56K?
But
Chip Chase is just sitting there staring at the computer burning away in the corner of the room. this was a bad idea.
This is the only thing Prowl ever does in the G1 cartoon. An episode to himself. And he never does anything except occasionally put a battle plan together. Like, this is the only time Prowl ever does anything of note in the cartoon.
Other than die.
Well,
and die. Yes, he did do that later.
Okay, but I think the dialogue between he and Blue Streak, like, it's really strong for me. Like, when they're jabbering back and forth before they fight the Decepticons. But, you know, if Skywarp, for some reason, tells them that Prime and Brawn aren't there to bail them out. You know, I like the idea that Prawn's a little badass. But it's Brawn. He's little.
He's kick your ass, suck, dude.
Yeah, dude, Brawn, he's strong, yo.
Just watched season one. Like, Brawn is like next to Bumblebee.
Dude, this very episode, he threw Optimus Prime as he drove over him.
Yeah,
Brawn, I mean, tons of stuff to do in season one.
Yeah.
Brawn gets like an episode to himself in Brawn's one of the stars of Fire on the Mountain. He's one of the main team of guys in the Ultimate Doom. Brawn's awesome.
But I just
talking smack about Brawn.
But the thing is, he's okay. So I'm putting myself in the mind of a Decepticon. I'm awesome. I'm a Decepticon. Brawn's a little shrimp. Why would I give him credit by telling Blue Streak and Prowl that Brawn's not there to bail them out?
In the episode once.
But even based on that logic, like, wouldn't it be an insult to someone to say, "Hey, this little guy isn't here to help you out"?
This is true. Yeah. And of course, you know, there's some truth to that because Prowl's battle computer is damaged.
Yeah.
It's not like he couldn't engage his walking computer and get up and walk away. He had to re-engage his battle computer.
Right.
Apparently, battle computer is common sense computer because you can't seem to do a bloody thing without Chip Chase sitting there sending messages over a 3-kilobyte modem.
But the thing is,
left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg.
ASW.
Jump on airplane. Fly airplane.
Has command lines. Chip knows that he's able to, like, program him to fire rockets off of a jet that he's probably never even seen.
I love that.
/prowl/ attack.
Attack. /prowl_attack.exe.
/prowl.exe.
N=.
Okay, one question. So, earlier on in the episode, when Megatron is trying to figure out where all this antimatter crap is, they go to Dr. Alcazar, and they're like, oh, he doesn't have it. Okay, well, this human doesn't have it. Just let him go. We're looking for another one.
We're going to go find somebody else.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake, don't use the mind-reading powers you're about to use 3 minutes from now on someone else to find out who he sent it to.
So the Decepticons have the ability to extract this information from Chip Chase's brain, but they can't recreate something that, like, a 15-year-old kid made.
Well, he is a genius, and the Decepticons are immensely stupid.
Well,
obviously, Cybertronian technology never quite got the hang of antimatter.
Yeah, of all this advanced technology, they don't have antimatter.
So
they do have Wi-Fi, though.
Yes.
Right.
So there we go. So Cybertron technology is merely 25 years in front of us. That's what this episode has shown us.
Probably some truth to that.
You can control the Transformer with a basic modem, a basic phone modem, and computer keyboard.
so they get the antimatter formula from Chip. The Autobots, like, break into the laboratory. That's a heavily fortified laboratory too, if you notice.
Yeah, like, a basic laboratory.
Every single scientific facility in the Generation 1 cartoon.
But
mile-high walls.
Megatron somehow throws the antimatter. It explodes. But it doesn't destroy all the antimatter that's 15 feet away from that. All the Autobots are injured. They leave. They go back. But there's, like, an actual sense of, like, unlike a lot of other times in the Transformers where everything seems superficial, there's like an actual sense of loss there. It seems like, wow, the Autobots really can lose. Not that that doesn't happen all the time, but just this. Maybe it's because I've watched this like 75 times as a kid, because it's the only episode of Transformers I had on VHS until I was like 16 years old.
Yeah, see, mine was Divide and Conquer.
Yes, so that... no, it's another classic.
Probably a better episode.
Yeah,
but better than Chip Chase and his 3 kilobyte mode. I'm not letting this alone. I cannot physically leave this alone.
But the long and short of
a lot of data to transfer.
So yeah, that means probably
it's just,
stupid.
It's just command lines. I mean, it's all text.
No, there's video. There's video.
The animation on this one.
I like the animation on this one.
It's weird, but it's nice to look at in still form because it's got this weird anime twinge to it, and these exaggerated proportions. I love the shot of Soundwave actually doing the fingers on Chip's head and doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like.
And slightly inflated forearms, a little bit pre-dream wavy, but not puffy, but just look quite imposing and impressive.
I like this.
So, but it's one of the single clumsiest episodes out of the first season as well. There are lots and lots of really visible errors, and even a lot of weird sound editing errors in it as well.
Yeah, we'd be amiss if we didn't mention the sound error that's in
the guard whose voice changes from scene to scene.
Well, this is the Soundwave episode.
Oh, yeah. Of course, that one too, yeah.
So, you know, this is the one episode in which they forget to modulate the Soundwave voice, and we get to hear that it's actually Dr. Claw.
Happened again in Web World, but that's like 2 years apart. You know?
Yeah.
So, but,
well, it's season 3, I don't care.
So, but the thing is, all of the voices don't really seem to match, like, the human characters to me. Like, watching it, they just seem to, like... It's like finally meeting someone that you've heard on the radio for years. Their face doesn't match their voice. It's like all of the characters in this that aren't human, except for Chip and Spike, their faces don't match their voice.
It's like, obviously the show had a kind of a smaller cast at this stage, but like when they attack that, I forget what kind of power planet it is they attack. When they attack that power
it's hydro,
planet.
It's hydroelectric.
That guard's Hound, and that guard's Plug, and it's like they're not even doing anything different. They're just speaking. And then you hear that one guard that's voiced by Chris Latta say something to Starscream, and then Starscream speaks back to him, and you're like, Chris Latta was a talented...
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but then like you hear Reflector in this as well, and it's like, oh, that's just...
That's Starscream, yeah, but that's like... Okay. Sometimes it's unavoidable. It's like John Stevenson. Everything John Stevenson ever did sounded like John Stevenson, but John Stevenson must have played a bajillion wizened old professors in Scooby-Doo episodes and things. So.
Except
that he played Wheeljack, which sounds totally different. I didn't...
No, Chris Latta, Wheeljack, but...
That's what I'm saying about Chris Latta. I'm talking about... You know, you've got Chris Latta Starscream, Chris Latta Starscream Reflector, and then Wheeljack, which is like...
Wheeljack is essentially exactly the same as Sparkplug with more robotic echo and a slightly higher pitch.
One thing I definitely want to mention before we wrap this one up is at the end of the episode, that really ominous statement from Megatron where he said, "One small boy came between me and mastery of the universe." That, like, has always stuck with me. If this episode had taken place in the Dreamwave universe, the next morning, Chip Chase's parents would have found him in bed, soaked in his own blood, with his spine torn from his anus.
I was always saying things like that in Season 1. Because that's another thing about Season 1, and something that's actually probably most prominent in an episode like this, is there is a sort of gentle continuity that runs through Season 1.
Yeah.
And this is probably the biggest example of an episode that follows on directly from the last one, where Megatron disappears in the space bridge for the first time of a million times across millions of comics and cartoons. But, just to preserve the idea that they would be back and Transformers would return next Saturday at 8/7 Central, he would say, like, "Well, I will be avenged, I still function," and then you would see him coming out of the Nemesis at the
end.
"I'll
get you next time, Gadget."
Yeah. I mean, they knocked that on the head for Season 2. They stopped doing that because, we made 65 episodes, we don't have to prove nothing to nobody. So they didn't really have to keep doing it. But all through Season 1, it's like, "I will be avenged."
Before we move away from this, you mentioned animation. Have you noticed that this episode has the most animated sound wave ever?
Like,
all of his movements are just all over the place, like, when he's running it. He's just going for it in a proper cartoon fashion.
When they're escaping at the beginning of the episode, and he like transforms and like flies into Starscream, that's like crazy. I mean,
yeah.
And that scene, at the hydroelectric plant where they actually draw in the rainbow over the waterfall, I've always loved that.
Yeah.
It's stylistically, it's a really nice and unusual episode, but the execution, just like on a production level, is probably one of the most, at least the most inconsistent, probably, of season one. I would say the first part of the Ultimate Doom is probably the worst looking season one episode. But
it's ambitious, if not excellent.
The Decepticons are a malevolent race of robot warriors. Brutal and merciless, the Decepticons are driven by a single, undeviating goal: total domination of the universe. In the war that raged between the Decepticons and Autobots for millions of years, their home planet of Cybertron was drained of its once rich sources of energy. In hopes of finding new reserves for making Energon their basic fuel, the Decepticons follow the Autobots to Earth.
Huh? What is it?
Laserbeak, prepare for flight. Operation Destruction.
It's firing!
Under the leadership of the ruthless Megatron, they continued their efforts to destroy the remaining Autobot forces. They attacked throughout the Earth and in space, using their underwater Decepticon headquarters as their staging base and bunker. But by the year 2000, the Decepticons had proven to be the losers of the last great war. In an attempt to bolster the Decepticon strength, the evil planet-gobbling world Unicron reformed Megatron into a new robot named Galvatron to lead the Decepticons in a new era. Now, in 2006, the Decepticons have retreated to a burned-out hulk of a planet called Char, a world of ash and ruin. Galvatron and his Decepticon lieutenants, the sleek and awesome Cyclonus, and the mighty Scourge, the master of the dreaded sweeps, strike fear throughout the universe. Their ultimate goal? To reconquer Cybertron and destroy the Autobots.
So we are back. That was Transformers Roll For It on Transformers Rewind this week. Next week, it's Revelation Part 3. I just gave Rob mods in the chat so that he could take care of some house cleaning. You should watch us live. We normally record. Today, we jumped on a little early. I think we jumped on close to at about 7:30 Eastern time. Actual show starts somewhere around 8:30 Eastern time on Wednesdays. We have a great chat room going. Lots of regulars. People come in and out. And it's a blast. It's frankly the only reason we do the show live. If we didn't have people around, I would just record this like on Sunday morning, or I would record it some other time when it's more convenient for me personally to, I would record it like whenever the hell I want to. I would like at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hey, you guys,
I was gonna say like 2 o'clock in the morning. Like
hey, you guys want to record a show? Sure. But no, I like doing it on Wednesdays. I think Wednesday is the best day that we've done. We've done the show like every other day of the week. So we seem to get the best turnout. There's nothing on TV to compete with. So love doing it. Love the chat. We want more people. It's a blast. I really, really do enjoy that. So tfradio.net/live. Or you can go in and follow us on Ustream. Which is at ustream.com/channel/radio-free-cybertron. So, that's it for this week. It's the show. It's pretty much it. You can find me on Twitter at bkilby or Facebook at facebook.com/bkilby. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at tfradio or on Facebook at facebook.com/tfradio. And of course, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. Would make me very happy. Hey, Chris, how can we find you on Twitter?
Oh, I am a man of the town on Twitter.
Man of the town? There's never been a more apt Twitter handle than that.
No. Or you can find our other podcast, hosted by Mr. JD Church, at FanboyVS. I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think. JD set it up as Fanboy VS, which makes sense. It's shorter. I like spelling out verses, but that's me. So it's Fanboy VS. And JD is out this week. He has the flu.
Aw. Poor JD. Get to feeling better.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, what about you?
Let me do the short version. For video game stuff, I'm at Flailthroughs. You will also find their posts to the Minecraft videos I've been doing with my brother and XV. At the toy review stuff is at Figure Reviewers, and you can see our Transformers figure and comics reviews at tformers.com.
Yeah, we you mentioned video games. We also do a video game podcast. It's monthly at this point. It's a new Soundwave. And I just did a review this week for an SNES flash card. It's on YouTube right now, but it will also hopefully be on the next version of or the next episode of New Soundwave. But if you get a chance to go to our YouTube channel, it's tfradio.net/YouTube. I always wanted one of these backup carts. Back in the day, you would back them up to floppy disk. And I just dreamt of, like, you know, putting in, like, my Street Fighter 2 Turbo cart, and then putting in, like, you know, three or four floppy disks to back it up on. Then later on, reloading the game back into memory via, like, the three or four floppy disks. Now you don't have to do that. You can do it via SD card. And, it's pretty cool. I paid, like, less than $40 for it.
Nice.
To steal.
Wow. Technology, will it ever cease?
I know. Yeah, I know. The thing is, I mean, this sort of stuff has been around forever. It's just been really niche. But now the price of technology has dropped so much that anybody can do this stuff now. And it's just really cool.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I'd kind of like to get one. I can't get the money spent on it, but it'd be cool to have.
I really want the NES version. If I ever want to drop like $100 on it, I could get the EverDrive from Stone Age Gamer. But a cheaper one would be cool too. And we were talking before about playing NES games on the PC. If you haven't had a chance, we talked about this on New Soundwave, but check out Mega Man Cross Street Fighter. You can get it for your PC for free.
Excellent. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Google it. It's a mashup between Mega Man and Street Fighter. If you love classic 8-bit gaming, or gaming at all, or if you have a heart.
Yeah, like, when I heard about it, I was like, I have to get this.
I heard about it, I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, and video games are just one of our other passions here. And our host for that show is John Deluna, who is also out this week. John, of course, has a life. We all have lives. Thank you guys for being here. I really appreciate it. Rob, for your continued dedication, and Chris, for coming on this week. Come back later. Any time, that would be awesome. I think next week we may get Paladin, if he's available, from Superhero Time to come on. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Paladin's great. Okay, so that's it for this week. We will be back next week on Radio Free Cybertron. Thank you very much.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2012 TF Radio Network.